Hi, and welcome to Fuel Your Feminine Fire. I'm your host, Michelle Marchant Johnson. I'm so excited that you've decided to join us for this series that is all about helping you love yourself, love your life, and find real love. And I am here with one of my wonderful friends and colleagues, the lovely Wendy Newman. Welcome, Wendy.
Hey, everybody. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, so happy to have you back, Wendy. I don't know how many times we've done this before, but I always love it so much and really appreciate your contribution. It's going to be so fun to have you here today. And Wendy, many of you know Wendy and her wonderful work. She's been in the industry for a long time and has amazing work out there. She's also a media celebrated author, dating, sex, and relationship expert, who's led hundreds of workshops, revolutionized the lives of over 70,000 plus women, probably more than that. And she's also a compassionate fellow dater who navigated through 121 first dates to meet her mate, Dave, and wrote her book, 121 First Dates. So welcome again, Wendy.
So good to dance with you again.
Yeah, I'm excited about our topic today, because as you and I were talking right before we started recording, this isn't a topic that anyone else has talked about at all on this event, or probably on many of my others in the past as well. So we're going to be talking about why men love powerful and successful women and how we push them away. And just saying that title, I'm guessing there are a few women out there that are probably having a reaction to that. Like, really? They love powerful and successful women? Because I don't think that's typically the way that a lot of us think about that. So let's just jump in. Let's just dive in right there.
Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know me, I went on 121 first dates to get to my partner, Dave. And during the 121, I interviewed a lot of the men I was dating, right? Because you're on a date. My interview questions were a little bit different. They weren't like, what do you do for a living? It's more like, so what do you think about women in this particular way? I'm like interviewing men about women constantly. And also in my day job for 20 years, I was leading workshops to women to help them understand men better. And so for 20 years in my work life, I was interviewing men. So I really feel like I have a great handle on what men say, but also what they mean. You know, when you have these safe, open, detailed, lengthy conversations, you can push past the surface answer to really get to the meat of it. And because I have such a love of women and have, you know, led to 74,000 women plus, I know what our concerns are. I know what our questions are about femininity and about being too powerful. And do I need to dumb it down? And I know all the parts, right? Because I'm also a woman who likes to be powerful in the world too. So I had the same concern when I was single. And I'm here to tell you the really good news is what I learned is they don't need us to dumb it down, to play it safe, to be less than them, but there are some things they need. And we're going to talk about it with, in terms of powerful and successful. And we're also going to wrap in their feminine. Mm-hmm. Because finding your feminine power, right? Like your feminine fire, part of the title of the summit, that it might not look how you picture it in your head. So for all you listening, we're told all the time through our culture and through workshops and through all kinds of gurus and experts that we need to be more feminine. If we were just more feminine, then the masculine needs a feminine. And it's true. Masculine men want feminine women. But our brain does a thing based on what our culture has shown us, what feminine looks like. I don't mean that. Everything that you're picturing in your head when I say the word feminine, based on your own cultural experiences, that is not what I mean. You don't need to be more of that. Mm-mm. Nope. You need to be more of yourself. And there's a couple of little tweaks we can make around being a really good fit for all men, and specifically masculine men who need a particular type of response from a woman.
So I can't wait to get into this. I can't wait to unpack this.
Yep.
So I know, again, I know there's a reaction out there from some women, you know, a reaction not only to this idea that men are attracted to powerful, successful women, and also there's a reaction, like you're already alluding to this idea of femininity. I mean, just the word feminine or femininity could be a highly charged word for a lot of us. Yeah. Based on, like you're saying, some of the things that we believe are societal expectations, or feeling like this is saying we have to be different than who we are, or that we have to like pretzel ourselves into being a certain way, or, you know, does this mean we have to wear frilly lace every day? And you know what I mean? It's like, there's a lot of connotations that can come into that. So I can't wait to unpack this more. So let's start, Wendy, with this idea of that's so prevalent. You hear it and I hear it. Well, I intimidate men. Or, you know, men can't handle who I am, or I feel like I have to dumb it down. Let's start there. Let's unpack this.
Okay. So it isn't true that we're intimidating to men. I've again, interviewed thousands of men on this, and I really liked what a man said. He said, yeah, women used to be intimidating to me when I was 15.
I love that.
Any grown-ass man is not intimidated by you. What's probably happened is he's turned off, which,
ouch.
Right. And I want to share with you one of the dilemmas that happened. So we're out there in the world being big and bold and amazing. And sometimes, especially when we're in a dating scenario, we'll come to that date with all of who we are, as we should, right? Like, bring all of you. That's great. That's like thumbs up. And then what we do is, while we're on that date, we're trying to attract him to us because we like this one. We're sitting across from one we like, right? We're trying to attract him, and we're thinking about our toolbox of things we can use to attract him. Like, we put on lipstick maybe that day or not, or we brushed our hair or not. We've done whatever we've done to attract that guy sitting in front of us. And one of the tools we use to attract is we try and impress him. So we'll start like laying down the degrees and I'm a rocket scientist, and I'm, you know, and we start doing this layering of experiences that feel to a man like competition. Mm-hmm. So you just turned into a dude in front of him, whether you meant to or not. Now,
so we're talking about, we're like layering our experiences and our accomplishments and our degrees and our everything out there, because in our minds, we're thinking he's going to be so impressed with this.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what it's feeling like.
Yeah. And sometimes it even turns into one-upping, you know, oh, you went to Berkeley, I went to Stanford.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you got your master's, I got my PhD.
Yeah, right? It almost has a feeling like mine is bigger than yours kind of feeling, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes. And unfortunately, the masculine will be triggered by competition, and he will compete. And that's why you have turned yourself into a dude, and he's now going to compete with you instead of do the things that you want him to do. Be attracted to you, be attracted to all of you, both physically and emotionally, right? And spiritually, where he'd be have his eye on watching out for you instead of competing with you. Mm-hmm. Can you see that? So be a rocket scientist. It's totally fine. But as you're sharing your journey to becoming a rocket scientist, you want to share it from the place of authenticity and excitement and a story. Be a storyteller. You know, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but what I learned was, you know, on clear nights, we lived in the city, but sometimes we get some stars and clear nights. And my dad would take me out on the balcony and we'd look at the stars together. And yeah, I just really had an amazing feeling about that. And it's something that I was really passionate about and something I wanted to do, right? I'm going to be an astronomer, right? Or whatever. Like, that's how you tell, you know, you tell the, this is how I got here, from a place of authenticity and passion instead of competition and stats. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, you whip out and it's a measuring contest. You know, you whip yours out and he's going to start whipping his out. So yeah. That's not going to be fun for anybody.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to like ask you about this too, Wendy, because sometimes when we're out there dating or having conversations with men, they do a lot of this where they're like leading with this kind of stuff, talking about themselves and their accomplishments and that sort of thing. And I think it's easy maybe to get drawn into that for one thing, but also how do we handle that, or how do we interpret that when a man is doing that? Because I hear about this from women all the time, where he talked all about me, he talked about himself, he didn't ask anything about me, and it's like brag, this, and the woman's kind of going, oh brother.
Yep, they're always going to do that. I'll tell you why, and I will tell you a way to reframe it for yourself so it becomes more palatable.
Okay.
So in that, and if you've listened to me before, I think I've shared this with Michelle before, but it's worth repeating. When a man and woman are on a date and they like each other, they are in the romance dance, right? And what's literally happening is she is doing everything she can across the table from him to impress him or to attract him. Like I said, we put on lipstick, we brush our hair, we pull out our tool bag of tricks and not tricks, but authenticity. And we want to give him all of who we are in our best possible way, right? So we're trying to attract. That is a knee-jerk biological response to try and attract someone. That's what we do. They have a thing too. They're not out there brushing their hair trying to attract us. No. They're trying to impress. Impress. Let me tell you all about who I am and what I do. So she's attracting, he's impressing, and then whoop, they're in bed. That's how that works. So that is the name of the game for dating. But like I said, what trips us up is he's trying to impress and you're trying to attract, and how you're using your attraction is through impressing. Now we have impress. Oh, shoot. It goes sideways, right? Because feminine doesn't show up. Competition shows up when we're one-upping. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's where things go sideways. And there's two kinds of men. I want you to think about it this way. When you're on a date and he's talking his head off, you want to think, is this guy who does this with everybody? Yeah, I think he's the guy who does this with everybody. But then sometimes you're like, why is this guy doing this? I don't feel like he's the kind of guy that does this on every date. He just doesn't, like, the whole rest of him doesn't feel like a show off in this way. That's really good news for you. Do you know what that means? He really likes you. And he can't help himself, just like you can't help yourself trying to attract him. He can't help himself from a biological, knee-jerk, unconscious standpoint. He's going to do, be, say anything to land that woman, right? And he might brag about accomplishments that he hasn't actually really had yet under his belt.
But, he might enhance or embellish.
Yes. So there are the talkers who just, that's what they're there for, to talk about how amazing they are. And then there's the other guy who gets home from the date and he's just like, oh, I can't believe I did that the whole time. Maybe she'll go out with me again, I hope.
Right.
And if you're in that situation, either way, you can ask for a turn, you know, just be like, yeah, that's neat. So let me tell you a story about, right?
Right.
So not just all about him.
Right. I think this is one case where it's okay to interrupt in a nice way.
Yeah.
I mean, I joke sometimes and say, if I were out there dating now and that were to happen to me, a man goes off on a tangent and talks about himself, I think at some point I would probably say, enough about you, let's talk about me.
Hey, let's take a moment for you to get a chance to know about me.
exactly. Or, you know, when I've talked to John Gray a couple times, he said, just interrupt him and just say, oh yeah, you know, that's really interesting, or yeah, that's really great. And then you change the subject to whatever, you know, what I've been thinking about, or blah, blah, blah. You change the subject to whatever you want to share. So I think there, I think this is one place, although it feels rude sometimes to interrupt, I think this is one place where we want to give ourselves permission if a guy's going on and on and on and on.
Yeah. And some women might not think it's rude at all. But if you're a woman listening who thinks that might be rude, what you want to know is you're doing it not only for you, but you're also doing it for him to give the both of you a chance. You know, you redirecting gives you two a new opportunity to have this date not go downhill. Mm-hmm. You know, to sit back and just not be rude, to be nice, and let it spiral down the drain, and you're all of the affinity that you might have had for him is gone because he won't stop talking. That's not good for either one of you. So you're saving him when you reroute.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. And then there's the guys, this is going off in a slightly different direction, but I think it's good to address this here. There's the guys that are kind of clams and don't really say much of anything. That can be a challenging situation too. Those are the two extremes that I hear the most about in dating. And I think maybe there's nerves, and in both cases, there's probably nerves and wanting to impress. But what about the guys that are like, they can't get hardly a word out of them? What do we do in those situations?
Well, I think that you just have the very best date that you can have. Mm-hmm. So you can already tell by this interview that I'm talker. If I'm on a date with a really quiet person, I would be a talker, but be conscious about it, right? Not be like just endlessly running off for the hour and a half of the date, but then continuing to ask questions and have, I can drive a conversation, and I'm sure you can too. So we drive a conversation, and if he's not talking, see what we can do to draw him out. And if we can't, sit there and tell lovely stories. And then when you're finally sick of it, oh, look at that. It's time to get going here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes inviting sharing by asking some questions. I think it's not a bad idea to have a few questions that you like to ask kind of in the back of your mind, because I think that can make dating more natural. It can feel more natural and it can feel easier when you're in those kind of situations. And I love the storytelling tip too. I think stories are really a really powerful way to connect.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, the questions that we can ask on dates right now, especially given what we've all just lived through, there's just so many great questions that can go straight to who he is. Like, what now that restrictions are lifting, what are you dying to do? What did you miss so much about being out in the world from being locked up? Or what did you learn? Or my favorite question of all time is, what do you love about your life? What do you got going on over there? What do you love about your life? Who are you? Right? Mm-hmm. So it gives them the opportunity to go deep or to be shallow. And if they're shallow, you can ask follow-up questions. And if you don't like what they're saying, you can move on to a different question. Like, so what do you got planned for the summer? Mm-hmm. You going anywhere? You still mostly masking inside? What's going on over there? What's your world like?
Mm-hmm. I like what questions, because they typically lead into open-ended questions. So I like questions that start with what, which are the ones you just modeled there. So yeah. Those are really good ones. So first of all, why do you think there is such a perception, coming back to kind of our original topic, why do you think there is such a perception that men are intimidated by successful, accomplished women? Why is there such a perception?
Yeah, it's a perception because we can literally, viscerally feel men shut down. Mm. But it's not for the reason we think. So he's impressing you, you're impressing him, you're being all of your big self. There's a little bit of competition there because you went to a better school than he did. And you feel the shutdown, right? And you're like, oh, that's what it is. He's intimidated by everything. I've done more than him. But what actually is happening is how it's landing and experiencing for him over here is, okay, she's bigger than me. She's stronger than me. She's done more than me. And from everything that I say and she one-ups me, what I can see here is she's not open. I have no space to contribute to her, to provide for her, to give her anything. She's got this. She's got this. And they'll leave because they only hang out with women that they can make a difference for, that they can provide something. So imagine, Michelle, that you and I were besties and we lived right next to each other in Salt Lake. Let's pretend that. And
if we did live right next to each other, we would be besties.
We would be besties, totally. So you call me up and you are just hysterically crying. Someone really close to you is deathly ill and you're very afraid and you're crying because you don't know if you can get to them in time. And I say to you, oh my God, Michelle, what can I do for you? Do you need me to come? Do you need to go out of town? Do you want me to come watch your dog? Do you need me to make you a casserole? Can I come over? I'm 5 minutes away. Can I come give you a hug? What can I do? And I'm leaning in to give and you're crying. And then you stop and say, oh no. It's okay. I'll get my act together. I don't need anything from you. Just stay where you are. I'd feel really ripped off as your friend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not going to let me nurture or take care of you in any way. You're not going to let me be there to be compassionate and let you cry on my shoulder. Like, so as a woman, we know, like, we need to give our gifts, all of the gifts of our brilliance, of our being there, of our coming together. And if our people don't let us in, we're going to be really upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing for a man. He needs to provide. It's a knee-jerk response of human beings. We need to provide for the people we care about. And if he's on a date and he doesn't know you and he's looking at you going, oh, she has got it all together. Nothing for me to provide here. I'm out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good way to illustrate that. It's a really powerful way to illustrate that. And by the way, I would absolutely let you come over and bring me a hug. And I'd say yes to that casserole too.
Yeah, you haven't had my cooking yet.
You haven't had mine. I have visions of myself being a domestic goddess, but it hasn't kicked in yet.
I'm a home chef girl. So I do want to share a quick story. A friend of mine who lived in downtown San Francisco, it was just a studio apartment. But it was a nice studio apartment in the nicest neighborhood in one of the most expensive cities in our country, right?
Right, and right.
She had lived there for like 15 years and she had collected all the things one collects in her life over the years and furniture and all the things. So she had gone on this date and the date went great. But she kept having that same experience too, that she just was so intimidating to men, right? And so she has this date and she really likes him and she brings him home and he walks in the door. They're going to have a nightcap. And he looks around this apartment of hers and he's like, wow. And she said, I know, right? It's amazing. And he's like, that furniture, wow, it's so high end. It's beautiful. And they're walking through her apartment and she's like, yep. And he's like, and you did this all yourself. And she said, yep, all good. And he smiled at her and said, you really have your life figured out. And she said, yep. Like, we're doing a great job. We're impressing him with how capable we are, right? And he said, there is zero room for me in your life and nothing to provide.
Oh.
Have a good life. And he walked out the door.
Oh.
He actually put on loudspeaker probably what other men would be thinking. And it's not that we need to downplay ourselves. It's not that we don't get to have fabulous homes we provide ourselves and fabulous cars we provide ourselves. But what our job is to do, two things. You do two things, you're going to be golden. One, don't compete, right? Come from authenticity, come from excitement and passion. Don't come from one-upmanship. So if you could do that. And the second thing is, show them what they can provide. Be open. Oh yeah, I drive a brand new Mercedes every year. I'm so lucky my company pays for it. And that's actually not anything that I'm ever looking for a partner to provide for me. But you know what? You know what I can't get on my own? A back rub or a poor baby or a listening ear or a fun time or someone to take me out to the restaurants where fancy people go and to have adult conversation. So if now that we're doing a lot of the providing for our own self. This is not the 1950s anymore. We don't need him to put a house over the little filly's head anymore. Now that we're big and bold and doing it for ourselves out in the world, what our job is to say, this is where I am open for you to give to me. I want your opinions. I want your love. I want your contribution. I want your attention. I want your affection. I want great sex, right? So we can talk about the things, and obviously on a first date, you probably won't do that. You might. I probably have once or twice in my life, so no judgment over here, but just be your authentic self and share what it is he can step into your life and provide, so that you've made room for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where he can see that his presence in your life is going to make a difference.
Yeah.
And it can be in all different kinds of ways that he can make a difference. And it's important that we can show that or communicate that, especially if you are a successful, accomplished woman, which are a lot of the women in this audience. I do want to sidetrack for 1 second, if we can, though, Wendy, is that all right? I know,
yeah.
Because we always dance.
We can do anything we want.
Whenever this kind of conversation, you know, something similar in a similar vein comes up, I always have a few women that write to me that say, well, that's all great. I don't really consider myself to be one of those really highly successful, accomplished women. And, you know, they're like, I haven't necessarily had the blockbuster career, or I haven't degreed myself up, you know, 4 different levels or that sort of thing. And so I want to have you address that a little bit too, because I don't want to leave those sisters out there out of this conversation.
Well, I have really good news for you, which is men do not care about that at all. It's us who, and again, it's not, I don't want you to get the wrong idea, because I'm not saying women are gold diggers. I am not saying that. But our natural biological compulsion is to find someone who's bigger than us, who's stronger than us, and who will take care of us. And if you're not looking for that, you are overriding the system. Good job. You are overriding your natural system that is unconscious and automatic for something from a human spirit place. Okay, but human animal will look for bigger, stronger. It's just, that's what animal does, because animal wants to survive on the planet. And if you get someone bigger and stronger and you get pregnant and you get sick during the pregnancy, then that bigger and stronger can swoop you two up and haul you off to a cave. And out of the way of a tiger, you're safe, right? So from a biological standpoint, we're built to look for that, right? And so that men aren't what, that's not a biological trigger for them like it is for us. So we will look for status. Where do you work? Oh, you work for Apple. How long have you been there? Ooh, 20 years. It's a lot of Apple stock. How many? Oh, you're a manager. How many people do you manage? Right. That's all status. By the way, I am speaking for myself when I say this.
This is one of the things I love about Wendy. She's so honest.
Yeah. Oh, Apple. Okay. Well, how can I ask you status questions without you realizing they realize you can't be covert about this? So that's our instinct tapping in. What men are looking at is, do I like her? Is she open? Can I provide anything for her? Right. Can I provide the things that I'm dying to provide? Whatever those things are. Every man is different, right? Can I provide the things I want to provide for her? And money is not one of them. I mean, there are a subset of men, obviously, who are going to be hunting that, but I'm not talking about the majority of men. They don't care about that. What they are looking for is, has she worked lately? And is she looking for her next husband because that's how she makes her life happen? And she's going to be a drain on me? They're going to concern themselves about a barnacle.
Right.
They're not going to concern themselves with someone that's having a life that is is fine. It's just great. It's what they wanted, but it's not a lot of money. Or maybe you haven't gotten quite where you wanted to get. They don't care about that. Or maybe you just got unemployed, but you have a plan to get another job, and they understand circumstances. They're fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think men also are looking for women that complement them. And so if they're accomplished in their own right and they have their own accomplishments, they don't necessarily need you to be on that same level or have those same level of accomplishments. Yep. They don't necessarily need that. They might want support and a companionship and encouragement and someone to love them and someone to appreciate them. They don't necessarily need you to be matching in accomplishments, because that's another thing I've had come up in various conversations with clients, is they're like, well, I saw online that he's done this and he's done this and he's got this job and he's got this career and this degree, and I don't have all that.
Good.
You know, the ladies are saying this to me. They're saying, I don't have all that, so I don't know if he'd want me, because we're not equals in that way. I don't think men need to have you be equals in that way. So I'm just kind of wanting to address this from like all these different points of view and all these different situations.
Well, Michelle, you've seen it the other way too. I am a total match for him intellectually. You know, these men, they don't want their intellectual match. They want someone who will just serve them. They're just intimidated by me because I'm at his level.
Mm-hmm.
No. And the conversation around, you want somebody that's an equal match for you, and you assume that he wants that too. He doesn't want that in the way that you think, because we're using it to compete. And he doesn't want to be in competition at home. He just doesn't. Does that mean an alpha man doesn't want an alpha female? No. You know, I built this, I don't mean to do a plug, but I built
No, you're fine.
I built a product called The Myth of the Alpha Male. And in it, I interviewed the biggest alpha I know, my husband. And then I interviewed a beta, a very helpful, a kind helper guy, a Mr. Rogers style kind helper guy, beta, right? To show you the distinctions of the two men and what they are looking for and what they provide and how maybe betas are really fantastic and you might need one. So, because everyone thinks they need an alpha, well, not everyone, but a lot of women think they need an alpha. And I really pull it apart. And I learned something about Dave in the middle of our interview. I'm like, wow, really? Which, you know, he said, why I picked you, besides the, you know, 900 things I like about you, I like you. That one of the reasons I picked you is because you are so strong and you are so alpha. But I can't have that in the dynamic of our relationship. So in my own personal relationship, my alpha partner needs me to be alpha in the world, but a support to him, not like a servant support, just like let him be the stronger between the two of us. He opens the door for me. He does chivalrous things. You know the word I'm trying to say. He does, you know, he wants to play that old school role with me. And we like that. It's play for us. It's fun for us. It's zingy for us. And it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't take anything or diminish who I am in the world. And I don't have to be more feminine. I don't have to wear pink taffeta.
Not a good look on a lot of us.
You know, I actually was born with a chemical imbalance, and I run higher in my testosterone than most women do. It served me so well. I'm a builder, and I've built lots of things. I've written books. I've created companies, more than one. Like, I love that level of alpha and testosterone driven life that I have. But even though I am that super type A with actual testosterone that fuels it, I know the importance to consciously shift when he gets home to be a girl, to be the receptive, place where he can come home and share all about his day and hear all about my day and connect in a way that he feels supported and loved and listened to by someone who's open. Mm-hmm. And you can see none of that. That's all feminine quality, open, flow, ease, support, listening, sharing, juicy sharing, storytelling. That's all feminine. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have anything to do with pink taffeta or pigtails or whatever strange thing our culture has stuck in our brain about what we need to be. 5-inch
stiletto heels.
Yeah, there's a 5-inch stiletto, although I used to wear them on dates, but I don't wear them anymore because I love my feet. But I don't know about you, Michelle, but for me personally, when I think of feminine, I think of the flowy hippie dancer with the skirt, and she's very thin and she's small. She's got long hair and she's kind of ethereal and she's emotional. And who I just described is everything that is not me.
Right.
So our brain will go, okay, I need to be everything that I'm not. Mm-hmm. Great. Great. That's who gets the man, everything that I'm not. Mm-hmm. It's not true. You need to be 100% you, be as testosterone fueled as you want. Maybe if you're like me, you can have extra testosterone in there making things happen, and then know to consciously shift and be receptive to all of who he is.
Yeah. And I believe for most of us, that actually feels really good when we can allow ourselves to shift into that energy, because I feel like even if you're a really highly motivated, accomplished, successful woman, if we're always running in that mode, I think it can really burn us out, you know.
Yeah, and our adrenal glands will be shot.
Yeah, speaking of the fire can start to go out because we're so worn out. I can remember being a single woman and being in my corporate career and operating in the masculine energy, and I had my own house and yard and I'm taking care of everything, you know, out there, you know, moving cinder bricks around outside my house or whatever, shoveling the snow, you know, goes on and on. And it was like, you know, I could do this stuff. I absolutely could do all of these things, but I would think, boy, it sure would be nice to not have to do all this stuff. Like that's one of the things where we're in touch with kind of our needs and our desires and our wants, just for having someone for support or having someone nice to come home to. I would go on business trips. I'd come home to this lonely, empty house, or I'd go on amazing adventures and I'd have no one really to share them with. You know, there's so many things that even when we have a lot of accomplishment or success in our lives, it's still so much sweeter and nicer to have someone to share those things with. And sometimes we can kind of lose touch with that when out of necessity or out of choice, we've been in that masculine energy for the many years or the recent past in our lives. We can kind of lose touch with even those needs or desires because we kind of feel like, okay, I got to do this. I have to do this. And we kind of suppress them. So I think one place to start in terms of being receptive is just even acknowledging it would sure be nice, even though I can do these things, it would sure be nice not to always have to.
And men know you can. They know you know how to open the door.
They do. They figure it out.
They know you know. They know that you can buy your own lunch. They know that you can shovel your own walk. You know, just the other day, my mom and dad, I was talking to my mom on the phone, and he asked her if he could run her car over and put gas in it and wash it. And she said, no. I was like, "What? Why would you say no to that? Because I can do it myself." Well, we all know that. But wouldn't it be nicer if you didn't have to?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And my girlfriend, during the time I was out there dating 121 first dates, you know, out there dating 121 different men, right in the middle of it, she was sitting on a mountain in California, not leaving her own town very much, not dating. And I said, I'm really worried about you, single up there on the mountain. And she was kind enough to not say, well, I'm watching you and you're failing and that left looks hard. So I'm just sitting here drinking my latte. eating some popcorn watching you, right? What she said instead, because she's kind to me. And she said, yeah, I don't really feel like I need to date right now because I feel like I have, like, I don't know, a good dozen boyfriends as it is. I said, you do? Who are they? What do you mean? She said, well, my next door neighbor comes over once he's shoveled his walk. He just keeps pushing his little mower there, a snowblower, and he does my walks. And when I go down to the Starbucks for my morning coffee, the manager, he always gives me the free shot of whipped cream, extra sauce for free. And then when I go to the store and the two guys behind the counter, they're always recommending the next great thing to watch on Netflix, you know? And so she walks around her world. And as a single woman, I highly recommend this for you if you're single. She walks around her world looking for opportunities to let men contribute to her. Mm-hmm. And it had her stay open at a time in her life. She was many, many, many years single and she didn't date. And that's a really opportune time for us to shut it all down. And she just didn't. She just kept being out and paying attention to where, yes, thank you for opening the door. And thank you for that free shot. And, oh yes, I will take the discount on the meat counter, you know, like having the opportunity to let men step in and provide something. Mm-hmm. And what that did is it kept those muscles strong for her ability to stay open and receive, which is femininity.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yeah. So powerful. Such a powerful story. And coming back to the car wash story for a second, I think wherever possible, you know, as long as it's not against, you know, illegal, immoral, or whatever you determine it to be out of sorts with who you are, if a man offers something, why not say yes? Why not accept? You know, when my husband offers to do something for me, I'll say, oh, yes, please. Or, yeah, that would be so nice. Or that would make me so happy. When I say that and I give him the opportunity, we both win. He does something nice for me. I receive that and he feels good doing it. And he gets acknowledgement and appreciation for doing it. Yeah. So I love that story about your friend and how she was out there interacting with men in a way that allowed them to give to her and she was receiving from them. And that probably made them feel really great too, because she probably appreciated them for it.
Yep. And one day someone asked her to coffee. And because she had such a strong muscle, she said, yes, went down, had coffee, never left his house. They've been married for 10 years. Wow. So even without the practice of dating for her to be able to find her love and her husband, I think the opportunity and practice, not in the dating, but in the being open to receive, really saved her, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you kind of go, hey, I had to go on 121 dates for that.
Lots of opportunities to receive.
Lots of opportunities to receive.
Yeah. And the reason we don't want to receive all the time is because we feel we'll owe them something. Mm. You know? But the gender, if I'm going to generalize like crazy here, the gender who offers up to help when they don't really mean it, that's us. We often offer, oh, do you want some help with that? When really don't ask me to help you grab the end of that table and drag it across the room. I can help you if you want. Right. Sometimes we ask to help when we don't really want to. Men don't do that much.
Mm-hmm. Nope. So you're saying they don't do it because they feel obligated to, or because they feel like that's an expectation. If they're offering, they're more likely to be sincere in what they're offering.
It stems from that really not lovely part of us that has been conditioned to be pleasing. They weren't. So our conditioning to be pleasing will have us offer when we don't wholeheartedly mean it. We'll do it. We don't wholeheartedly, we're not excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
Then don't.
Yeah.
Again, super big generalization there, but, you know, obviously outliers on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. This is such a great conversation. I think it's wonderful to kind of look at this from a little different perspective and a little different angle than what might be kind of a prevailing belief for a lot of women, because I know over the years, and I thought it myself too, back when I was rocking it out in my corporate career, I thought the same thing. I thought men are intimidated by me. They weren't.
Nope.
No. Not in retrospect.
And, you know, the truth is there's going to be a lot of men. If you're big, there's going to be a lot of men that you're going to be too big of a handful for them. I was too big of a handful for many of the men that I dated, but it was fine. I didn't take it personally. I just realized he didn't have big enough hands for the handful I am. So just not a fit. Not bad, not wrong, not bad for me, not bad for him, not a fit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Find bigger hands.
Find bigger hands. Which you did. And only 121 first dates, right?
Yeah, only.
Wendy, this is so much fun. We always have such a ball talking. And I know also you have a free gift for our audience. And I want to give you a chance to share a little bit about that. I don't really know what it is. I don't have it here.
I don't either, but I'm going to make it up and then I'll have our Michelle get it to you.
Okay.
Because I'm just really going with the flow of this conversation. So if this has been a good conversation for you to listen to, the thing that I want to share with you, I'm going to share a piece of the myth of the alpha male. Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
I have a workshop that's a DIY audio. There's also video, but if you want to just download the audio and go jogging or something. And I'm going to pick the best of the 6 sessions. So I'm going to pick the best of the 6 sessions to give to you for free to help distinguish some of this stuff out for you a little bit more.
I think that'll be great.
Yeah.
That'll be great.
So it'll be a continuation of the conversation when it comes to alpha men and beta men. Yeah.
Okay, that'll be awesome. So if you're watching or listening, we'll have the link below the audio or video that you're listening from so that you can get that. And I'm a huge fan of Wendy and her work. We've been in contact for a number of years, and I know you're going to want to stay in touch with her because she writes these great emails every week where she puts out fantastic advice and takes on some of the most challenging and crazy questions that people have out there. And so I know you're going to want to stay in touch with her. So be sure to download this by clicking on the link below. And that way you'll get to stay in contact with Wendy. And Wendy, as always, it's so much fun. Thank you so much for your contribution here.
Oh, you bet. Thank you. Yeah, I really hated newsletters. And so I decided to put in old school Dear Ann Landers style Q&A column out instead. And it's been a whole lot of fun. So I'm always here for the questions.
Yeah.
And can I share one last piece?
Absolutely.
I bet that there is a couple that you have known that got divorced. And I want you to think, all of you listening, I want you to think if there's a couple in your life and you're like, how could they get divorced? She was like, perfect. She's like the perfect woman. She had it all together. She had this amazing career and this, like, she was lovely and kind and hilarious and like had her whole life all put together. How could he leave her? Who was he going to replace her with?
Right.
Right. If you ever had that experience, I have. I've known a woman like that. And I asked the man who had the woman like that, hey, so what happened there? She seemed perfect. And he said she was perfect. She was absolutely perfect. And I couldn't contribute anything to her life because she had it all together. There was no partnership. There was no part for me to have in a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to have a part in partnership. Now that one very, I want to leave you with the word independent. Independent has always felt like a really great positive thing for a woman to be. And we are independent and it's awesome, but independent is solo. Independent is I got this all on my own. Independent is I don't need anybody for anything ever. And there is no possibility to have partnership with independence.
Right.
Now, my personal marriage is based on a lot of freedom and a lot of autonomy. Freedom and autonomy is different than independence.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see that? Mm-hmm. So independence means I don't need nobody for nothing. I got this. And partnership is I have a part to play in your life and you have a part to play in mine. And we're going to come together in ways that are empowering to both of us. So walking around saying you're an independent woman, what you're telling men is I don't want partnership.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a beautiful way to describe it too, partnership and breaking that down where we both need to have a part to play in a partnership. I just think that's a really beautiful way to think about it.
Yeah.
And but really confident, kind of full circle.
Competent, strong, freedom, hugely important to me. It's different than independent.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Wendy. That was a beautiful way to wrap. And thanks to everyone for watching. We're grateful that you're here. Hope you'll join us for more of the event. And Wendy, I really am grateful for our friendship and that our paths have crossed a few years back and for the many ways we've been able to collaborate. It's really been a joy and a blessing. So thanks so much.
Oh, you bet. Thank you for having me back again, Michelle. It's always fun to play with you.
All right, everybody. Take care. We'll see you soon for more of Fuel Your Feminine Fire. Bye for now.
Bye, all.